Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm Ben Trueblood alongside John Paul Basham.
Yo!
And Mary Margaret West.
Hey.
Who is recording her final podcast, at least on like a ongoing basis.
Yes.
With us today.
It's and true.
We're sad about that. You're going to be missed.
Thank you.
Mary Margaret is, family is going to be moving, and so she's taking another role. I don't want to tell whatever story you, it's your story.
Well, thanks.
But we did want to let the podcast listeners know that, like, when they don't hear you anymore.
It's not like an episode of Up and Vanished or something.
Right. It's so. Like Mary Margaret's just gone.
It's all good, yeah.
She's actually moved and taken another role. Husband got a new job and all that good stuff. It's a great story, and we've loved having you on the podcast.
Thank you.
Just wanted to take a moment and say thank you.
Absolutely. It's been a ton of fun, talking is a gift for me, so I've enjoyed talking with y'all and just talking about stuff that matters and about student ministry, which has been such a passion of mine for a long time now, and just getting to meet some of you guys at events over the last couple of years has been such a blast. I've been at Lifeway for 7 years now, and the last two here on the student ministry team serving, doing girls ministry, and so this has been a bittersweet thing, but when we were praying for a new job for Jonathan, didn't at first think that it would be outside of Nashville and didn't think it would make it, you know, mean a big move for us, but just as the Lord continued to make it clear over the last few months, we just said, okay, Lord, wherever you want us to go, whatever that looks like, and just for my husband Jonathan to get to take a next step in his career and just the next thing for him that you know, makes me just, I'm super pumped because I see how excited he is about this next chapter of life and ministry and just a new season for us to get to go on up. You know, we're a year and a half. We've been married for a year and a half now. And so it'll just be a fun new adventure. And I'll be doing student ministry in a different context now because I'm going to be teaching in school, teaching middle school Bible and getting to continue to teach the word
that
to students.
It will be a different context.
Yeah, I know. Like, I won't be Mary Margaret. I will be Mrs. West, which is bizarre.
Wow.
Like, I think that's going to be one of the weirdest things.
And you'll be able to fail people in Bible, which I think secretly every youth worker wishes they could do.
Do you want to?
To fail? No.
Do you want
to
fail somebody?
I want them to love Bible class. Like, I want them to love, you know, learning about the Word of God in just a different context.
And are you going to throw stuff at your kids if they say the wrong answer?
I might. What should I throw at them?
Stapler.
Oh. Yeah, no lawsuits there.
Maybe if you have the small plastic ones.
Yeah.
All right, I know when kids come to you, because you're super relational, they're going to love you, and they're going to come to you with middle school issues. Are you going to laugh at them?
I might, because sometimes I laugh.
We've talked about it on the podcast.
I laugh when bad things happen or when people like when people do dumb things. Like, I am not, my empathy level is very low, and it's pretty obvious. And so we'll just have to see how well I can hide some of the stupidity that happens around me, you know.
Well,
so should be interesting.
It is. You're going to be awesome.
Yeah, you are.
We're super excited for you and for your husband taking the next step in his career. We will miss you greatly on the podcast and around the office, but she's still going to be Mary Margaret C.
Yeah.
On Twitter. So if you want to say goodbye and you want to send your messages, feel free to do that. And we will move forward now with Mary Margaret on this episode, but also welcoming in the one and only Director of Leadership at Lifeway, former youth ministry guy, former executive pastor, Todd Atkins.
What?
So just so you know about Todd, like, he spent a lot. How many years did you spend in student ministry?
4 or 5.
Okay. 4 or 5 years in student ministry.
I've spent over a year at camp. Between being a student and, like, actually working camps, I've spent over a year of my life at camp.
Which is an amazing statistic. Like, cumulative days.
That's impressive.
More than 365 days spent at camp.
That's a lot of days.
That's a lot of camp.
Camp food.
And you're still sane.
Lots of french fries.
Yeah. So that's good.
And if you look at my team, Ben, you know this. I love to hire people that were camp staff.
Yeah.
That went back repeated years because it takes a special person, a special work ethic, frankly, to come back for more than 1 year, because you're working like 16-hour days.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous schedule. Yeah. I never worked camp, but now having been at Lifeway and seeing what our camp staff does every single year.
Yeah.
Like I tell them all the time, like I couldn't do what you could do. Like I believe that I could summon it and muster the excitement and I could do that for about 2 weeks. I'd be done. Like I was youth pastor that was always trying to figure out how can we get camp into a shorter period of time.
Like a 4-day camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how
three
can
day
we
camp.
Get this?
That's what we did. 4-day camp.
Yeah. And we packed it all into
two
4 days,
days
and got the heck out of there.
That's awesome.
But like I couldn't do what they do.
But listen, the last 2 days of like a 6-day camp, I feel like are the ones where you're just waiting for the really bad injury or the the drama that has bubbled up the first 4 days. It finally just comes out. It comes out on day 5 and 6. So if you just leave on 4,
yeah,
you're at the high note and you take it home.
But since that's most good. Of our camps are 5-day camps, we would still love for you to come to a 5-day camp.
That's right. Those are truly the best.
Yeah.
Good
stuff.
Come to our 6-day. There are diehard 6-day camp youth pastors out there. But here's, you could have like
it's
your
a stewardship issue, Ben.
That's right. Your students can have an entire relationship with a boyfriend or girlfriend throughout the course of camp.
If this is true.
If you do a 6-day
camp,
the
whole life cycle of the relationship.
Yeah. But this day 6, they're breaking up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Home.
On the bus.
So Todd he's been around youth ministry for a lot of time. Also served as an executive pastor at McLean Bible Church in the Washington, D.C. area.
Ironically, where Platt is now, and guess who I was on teams with 20 years ago this summer?
I'm going to guess David Platt.
David Platt, that's right.
There we go. There you go. Which is amazing. So
Full circle.
And now, Todd, just again, just so you guys know kind of who Todd is as we dive into the conversation here around leadership and building teams, which is a topic we cover on the podcast a good bit. But the reason why we do is because it's the most important thing that you have in your student ministry. It's what helps you reach more students, what helps you disciple more students. It's what helps you not burn out in student ministry from trying to do everything yourself. Todd is behind all of the ministry grid work here at Lifeway. If you're familiar with that, if not, you can find out more at ministrygrid.com. It's a training tool for your church. And then you can Todd leads the Pipeline Conference.
Yeah.
As a part of his work here. Yeah. So with that as kind of the background, so everybody knows where we're headed, let's dive into the why behind a leadership pipeline. So
it's biblical.
It's biblical. So there we go. Dive into it.
Let's close in prayer.
That's all.
It's the shortest podcast ever.
Just do it.
No, I mean, you know, we can throw out all kinds of one-liners of, you know, we're not just supposed to make disciples. We're supposed to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. Or you're not just saved from something, you're saved for something. But really, it really is moving people from Ephesians 2:8-9 to Ephesians 2:10. So part of what we're trying to do with Pipeline is address the issue that the church growth movement brought about, which was we moved the finish line became baptism, not the starting line. And so we want to move that back and say baptism is really the starting line. And once we have people come to a faith in Christ, we need to then help them understand that they're God's workmanship and they cannot grow into spiritual maturity apart from using their gifts and service to Christ. You can't. So it's part of it. Serving is part of it. Now, a big part of Pipeline 2 would be just the idea of multiplication at every level or succession at every level. So if you're a volunteer, you aren't successful at being a volunteer until you produce another volunteer. And so we would say, hey, it's not the staff's job to recruit and develop other volunteers. It's your job as a volunteer to recruit and develop other volunteers, which kind of sounds weird at first. But when you think about it, they are the best positioned to actually do that. They actually know more people that are potential volunteers through relationships they have or their small group or whatever classes that they might be a part of. But also, they actually know what it's like to be a volunteer. We may have written the training or the guide or whatever, but they're the ones doing it week in and week out. So they are best positioned to recruit and train another volunteer. So it's just putting a practical framework in place to help them do that. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. I mean, like one stoplight in the county, not the town.
One stoplight and 16 moonshine still.
Oh, it was a very intriguing place. And the people, I grew up at the first church I was in before my dad became a pastor was Pleasant Ridge Baptist Church. And I can remember being there on Sunday nights and my dad, you know, shuffling his feet back and forth in the gravel parking lot after something called Baptist Training Union back in the day. And that was something that was basic discipleship and basic development that had a scope and sequence to move my dad along in his development. But also there was programmatic things in place for me to move me along in my development. But the big thing out of that is this. There were people in that church that cared enough about me to invest in me and cared enough about me to put me on that journey. They couldn't have asked me a good coaching question to save their life. They couldn't. These were farmers and factory workers, but they were perfectly capable. They were good and godly people, perfectly capable of having that conversation with me. So all I am trying to do is to say, hey, we used to get those people two or three times a month in our churches. When I was a kid, that's how often you went to church. Now, if we're lucky, research says it's two or three times a month. Mm-hmm. So to move from two or three times a week to two or three times a month. Now, how do we effectively move them? Well, we better have a specific scope and sequence. We better present them with a map and not a menu mentality. We can't just say, here's everything for you, or we're going to entertain you, or we're going to meet all your felt needs. No, it's moving them through that specific framework. So that is pipeline in a nutshell. So you may have heard the term leadership pipeline before, but that is what it's really, that's what it's really all about. It's not a 8-week training or a little program. It is, hey, if you implement this in your church, it's going to take a year or two or three to do it, but it's so very much worth it.
So a couple things that you mentioned there that I think will be good to circle back on. One is you mentioned the volunteer isn't an effective volunteer until they've produced another volunteer.
Right.
And I would say that's kind of turning it on its head for a way for the way that majority of student pastors would think about that. Like, I know that youth pastors would say to their volunteers, we want you to help us recruit more volunteers. Give us the names of your friends as you see people, other parents that you think would want to serve in student ministry. Let us know. And then normally we're quick to take that and run with it.
Right.
And what you're saying is, no, keep the volunteer in that process the whole way through.
They are the person that's best equipped to train that volunteer in that role. So we would say, hey, it's one thing to it's one thing to offer training. It's another to actually model the way. So we would say, hey, you don't lead to transformation unless you've gone through an experience of knowledge, experience, and coaching. So it's not just a transfer of information. That's an information dump, which is what we do to most of our people when we bring them in. That's what we call training, but is really onboarding. But beyond that, it's walking them through, this is how we do this, and this is why we do this. So watch me, then it's help me, and then it's you do it. I'm gonna be here to help if you need me, and then I'm just here to watch. But after every single time, it's vital that during that process, we have a conversation, that there is feedback that happens just to give context and why and all that. But again, making sure that feedback is there, because that knowledge experience coaching is what leads to mastery, what leads to competency in something.
Well, and I think what is really good about that is it's not only asking your volunteers to recruit more volunteers for you, but the language that you used is produce another volunteer.
Yeah. Right.
And that is that taking someone in as an apprentice, you're going to learn from me, I'm going to model this for you like you were just talking about, and then you're going to be sent out, which is, when I think about that through the lens of the student pastor, that's taking some vision casting another level. When you say as a student pastor, it is one of my highest priorities to pour into you as leaders, because as I duplicate my influence into you, you're able to reach a certain number of students, you know, and we together as a community are more effective to reach these students. But then the next step is, as you are duplicating your influence, not only into the students that you're discipling, but in producing more of those volunteers, you're now a part as a volunteer of that vision from the senior leader in that student ministry.
Right.
And I love handing off the baton in that way. I think it gives even more ownership to those leaders beyond just, I'm teaching a ninth grade guys group. No. Right. It's much more than that. You're an agent, you know, a part of this team in expanding this team to expand the capacity of the work that we're going to be able to do as a ministry. There's so many more kids to reach, and we're all in this.
So I would say one more thing, too, which would be slightly controversial, but I was unabashedly student-led, where perfect example would be a guy named Jay Mosser, who Lakota East High School, just outside Cincinnati. You know, this guy was student in our student ministry, comes to know Jesus, on fire, gets engaged in a small group, starts to serve, goes through our little leadership, you know, kind of program. I start meeting with him and some students on a Wednesday morning at, like, I don't know, crazy a.m., 6 a.m. at a McDonald's to do a Bible study. And that same process that I just described to you, I did with Jay Mosser.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating is to watch that take place and watch that responsibility, authority, whatever that you've given is now being held by that student. Now, sometime during my tenure of student ministry there, we ultimately ended up getting kicked out of the high schools. I mean, before me and, you know, other people, we were like able to go to lunch there. We were able to do it. We got kicked out. My students didn't get kicked out, and they were the primary carriers and creators of taking our, you know, I don't know, so bringing people in and making sure that got proliferated. And then the most beautiful thing, the most fulfilling thing ever, is watching your legacy become not what you do, but someone you develop.
Yeah.
And to see that student bring another student through and do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Is one of the most beautiful things ever. And Jay Mosser, last time I checked, is a student pastor somewhere in Georgia. So that will be my legacy. I was not a good preacher. I wasn't. I was a good systems guy. I was a good, you know, those things guy. And, I mean, I'm telling you, if you can just grasp, for some of you, you feel that too. You're like, hey, man, I'm not the best preacher. Or sometimes I get up and, you know, I just don't know. It's way more than just that preaching element that you have for those kids. And you being, shifting from being an intuitively good student minister, just I'm good with people, I'm good with students, I naturally have that affinity, to an intentionally good student pastor where I'm actually strategically thinking about it and not wasting a single moment I have in these 4 years with these kids. That will maximize and multiply the effect of your ministry beyond measure.
So we are right now, as this podcast is going to be released, we're in August, and chances are, unless you live on far East Coast and you haven't started like your new season of small groups yet, chances are you have started those already. You've recruited your leaders. You've launched your new groups this year. You've had a lot of churches call it Promotion Sunday or whatever,
right,
whatever terminology your church uses. Chances are that's already happened, and you're in this moment. And you are kind of having the exhale after the last month of recruiting, 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 recruiting,
right,
because man, you finished camp, your students served at VBS, and so you were involved with it, or some kind of summer thing that your church does, and you ran, and you realized about a month ago, I've got to fill these spots that are in my student ministry. And so you've recruited and you've filled that, those spots, and you've exhaled and thought, man, I'm glad that's over. Having that statement of, man, I'm glad that's over, is the wrong approach in regards to leadership. And so we want to encourage you to have a mindset of recruiting year round. And I believe, you know, a statement that we've said a lot is always be recruiting. And the one of the reasons for that, I mean, Todd, I think, has articulated the biblical reason for that is it's an actually an act of you discipling someone to help them find a place of service. The other side of that is your ministry is going to have the potential to grow in direct correlation to the number of volunteers and team that you are bringing on and developing as leaders. Your ministry is not going to grow unless you're multiplying yourself into other leaders and expanding your team.
Right. And so going back to me talking about, you know, the church in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, those were good and godly people, and they were perfectly capable of walking people through questions or a scope and sequence. They needed me or somebody like, not me, because I was a kid then, but, you know, they needed somebody to help them pull together a framework and something, provide them with a clear direction. So it is to say, hey, here is our application, or here is the one page description of what this means for you as a leader. One of those things is recruiting other people. But what does that actually look like? It is being very clear about what your processes are. It's being very clear about what a leader is. If not, you're really reliant on yourself. That's it. Because it all depends on me versus, okay, if I do the hard work on the front end and strategically think about this process all the way through the year and strategically think about how people have entered our ministry and how I can hand off these things effectively to a volunteer or a leader to be able to recruit and develop, then, you know, it, you have two choices. You can either be the master chef, the iron chef who comes in and gets all the disparate ingredients and, like, you know, makes something special. Or you can be Betty Crocker, and, you know, Funfetti cake is still really good. That's what I would tell you.
Yes, it is.
So your job is to put that in the box and give the directions of, you know, hey, you drop in two eggs, set the timer, mix it up, and go. It's not, is it perfect or is it as good as you might have done it? Maybe not, but you have effectively practiced Ephesians 4 and given away the ministry. Mm-hmm.
So we have student pastors in all the time at our Student Ministry Essentials conferences. We'll talk about recruiting. And we have student pastors say, man, I really try to recruit. You know, the last 3 or 4 years, I've really pushed. I've done everything I know to do, but I just am having a hard time getting people involved in my ministry and wanting to jump in at the level that I need them to jump in. What are some... For the student ministry leader that wants to start taking steps in this direction, what are some practical handles, 2 or 3 things to kind of help them jumpstart this process and being effective in recruiting?
I mean, the first thing I would say is, there's a couple things, but really, are you dumping, delegating, or developing? So we're told that delegation is the number one thing. All delegating does is it's matching a person with a position. Dumping is we don't really care, which is what's done in most churches, which is, hey, I need a warm body here at this place, and I'm going to transition this. I'm going to transfer some information, and I'm going to make sure that that is covered. It is about coverage.
Yeah.
Which always brings... problems.
Yes.
It does. It does. And it is harder to actually develop, to move from up the ladder to developing people. But I would say your first primary thing is to take a step back and really examine yourself and say, do I dump, do I delegate, or do I develop? Second, I would say take an audit of how you spend your time. Write down the 20 ways you spent your time this week. Just write them down right now. Press pause on this podcast. Write them down. Okay. Now you're going to make two columns. One is developing. One is doing. Don't cheat or listen to Satan, who will whisper in your ears that this is both. This is both. This is kind of both. No, it's either developing or it's doing. And my guess is if you're like most, you're going to be doing most of it. Yeah. That is the wrong piece too. And lastly, I would say, are you giving your people clear on-ramps for ministry and clear ways to develop? Is it an on-ramp or is it a cul-de-sac? Is it just, mm-hmm. I'm getting you in the door, I'm barely giving you enough information, and you certainly aren't growing or equipped to bring other people in. So those are the big pieces.
And, you know, to kind of take that same question like another step further, I'm thinking about the student pastor who is brand new, who just came, like, he was an intern 3 months ago, and now he's serving as a student pastor, or the bivocational student pastor, or, you know, some of the ones who have been, like, in different roles, but maybe are jumping into a new church environment, and they're either the young guy, the new guy, the guy who has been doing this, doing leadership in other contexts, but maybe not in a church. Like, how, you know, because I remember what it was like to move from intern to church staff member and to look at all these adults who are looking at me and right. who are my parents' age, and I'm trying to figure out how to lead them. Like, how, and we talk a lot about leading up here at Lifeway, but how do those same pieces as the new guy, the young guy, like the maybe inexperienced or just different experienced kind of person, you know, lean in and lead up effectively those ways too?
The most effective thing that you can do is be prepared. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the best student pastor or the smartest student pastor. You just have to be the most prepared. And frankly, student pastor, if you want to be really impressive in a staff meeting, just show up actually prepared for the staff meeting and you'll be smarter. You'll appear to be smarter than the 80% of the people at the table. Being prepared will really help in that with the whole idea of dumping, delegating, developing.
Yeah.
Because if you dump on a leader, if the first thing they experience, or even the exploratory meeting of, do I want to be a volunteer? If they come and they see that you're not prepared, mm-hmm. or that, you know, you don't have a clear pathway for them to run on, they're going to be out. I mean,
yeah.
They will. If they're a leader in the community or a leader in their business or whatever, they can smell that from a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
You have committed the cardinal sin of this day and age, which is waste my time. Forget about the fact of how much time they waste on their phone, and they have no time and they're so busy. However, you have committed the cardinal sin. You've yeah. wasted their time. And you won't get it back again. So I would say the number one way, even a young guy,
yeah.
Is just coming in really prepared, really clear. A clear ask of what I want you to do, and make your next step easy, obvious, and strategic. And that will cover a multitude of not being the best preacher, not being the best with people, or yeah. not being the best with fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You don't have to be insecure, because you're prepared and you're a good steward of what God's given you under your care.
That's good.
Todd's on fire in here. I love it.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So here's a challenge, specifically in the area of...
You want some really bad stories? Because I got some.
We kind of do. I mean, yeah. that would be awesome.
I got a good one. But we
fire away. Is it student ministry related?
Oh, yes.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay, here we go.
Come on.
This is a story about how this podcast almost never happened, because I would not be in ministry today.
Oh, this is going to be great.
It's a good start already.
All right. So... keep in mind, my dad becomes a pastor when I'm 8. I grew up in church. Somehow, after my dad became a pastor, like, everybody in my family started becoming pastors. It was great. But I was the poster child, pastor's kid, and, like, went very wayward as a student, and then came back in college. And my sophomore year in college in Cincinnati, this church asked me to go to camp with their students. I loved camp, so I went. And then they were like, hey, we want you to be our interim student and children's person. And they didn't have a senior pastor at the time. All really red flags here. Inner city, really, 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 really rough area. I cannot tell you how much. So
and
this
at
is
this time, were you still in the wayward zone, or
no.
you kind of?
I came back around.
Okay, okay.
But all
back.
I knew of student ministry was country student ministry, which is lock-ins.
Oh yeah.
So I decided I'm going to have a lock-in.
Oh my gosh.
With
every week,
the terrace was at the end of the street. The terrace was, I think, 9 streets that went across this giant hill. That was development, housing development. So this was like my constituency, right? And the church had been broken into, I don't know how many times. So I was supposed to call the police anytime I was there after dark. I'm not joking. And so I
to
hold
notify
a lock in.
Them that you're going to be there.
Yes, just so they knew that it wasn't
somebody
who broke it
there.
In. Huh. So I decide that we are going to play a lovely game. We are going to basically capture the flags / sardines, and everybody goes out. One team goes out to hide, and then the other team tries to find them. Well, this church had been built onto I don't know how many times. So it's a massive church that, you know, was in very much disrepair, and the neighborhood had switched, and there's like, you know, maybe 100 people went there, but there's 25 kids there on a Friday night, and it's, you know, like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the police drive by, and all they see is flashlights all over the inside of the church. Luckily, I was the first one back to the fellowship hall, which had it was a basement and had a side door. And I run in into the room, and I basically slide into the room almost. And there are probably 8 or so officers and 3 German shepherds on the big metal. On the big metal.
No way.
I'm not talking about like a normal, you know, little dog leash thing, on the big metal ones.
Yeah.
And they're just salivating all over the, you know, 1950s tile floor. And shotguns are racking. I'm getting yelled at really badly. I have never been blessed out like I was just then, because luckily I was the first one there. They were like, we were less than 30 seconds from letting these dogs loose. Do you know what they would have done to your students? Do you know the lawsuits that would have resulted?
My
Do
goodness.
You know?
Oh, my gosh.
It was crazy. So the Lord, he is good. Because
that would have
mercies are new every morning.
His mercies are new every morning. Ooh. That, my friends, is how I got started in ministry. Much like I learned to swim in the country. Much how, let me bring this back for you people. Much how, like how we all got our start. A lot of us got our start because somebody threw us in. My dad and my uncle taught me to swim. No joke. Me and my cousin the same day. By repeatedly throwing us into the creek. And one was standing in the creek. Of course, we didn't drown. But we learned to swim because we didn't drown. Yeah. And most of us get thrown into ministry. Yeah. And the only reason why we ended up staying in ministry is we figured it out. We learned how to swim. But that doesn't have to be the way.
Yeah.
And that should not be the way for people under our care. And a lot of times we'll look and we'll be like, well, they, you know, I had to figure it out. I had to learn the hard way, or I had to, you know, it's the same excuse people get for a discipleship. Well, nobody ever did it for me. Or it is,
that's right.
Do not repeat that. Do not repeat that cycle over and over again. You don't have to get screamed at by police and German shepherds in a basement, dusty basement.
You would have forever been known as the dog attack guy.
I would have.
Hey, you know that youth pastor way back when that caused all the dogs to attack the students?
This is great. I'm glad
Legacy.
Smartphones weren't available
Legacy.
Then.
For sure. Because I love that the visual of breaking that cycle of teaching people how to do ministry by just throwing them in the water
That's
and
so
letting
good.
Them figure it out. Because that really is an approach that many take when we can break that cycle. And that's a great challenge to remember. Todd's got something else.
Can I say one more
yes,
thing?
Yes, yes.
Okay, what ends up happening is this. Someone shows up. They actually show up. And on time. They aren't a sociopath, and they do well with students and other adults.
It's actually a checkbox.
It is. It is.
Not
and
sociopath.
Do you know what we do? We
on
put them over more people.
Yeah, we
oh,
do.
Oh, you should be a leader. We put them over more people. Do we train them prior to? No. If we train them at all, it's after they get into place. And so that's what we've effectively done. But that's how it works in most organizations and most churches. You move from leading yourself to leading others. and you keep doing what made you successful. It's the inertia of success. What made me good was by doing these things. And now I'm just trying to do those things at a higher level, even though that shouldn't be my responsibility anymore. My responsibility is these people that I've been given under my care, but nobody's prepared me at all to do it. And that's the number one reason why, sacred or secular, people wash out in that first rung of leadership. When I move from leading myself and being responsible for myself to being responsible for others and leading others, because they don't make the mind shift that has to take place, the way you value your time, the way you spend your time, what you value has to shift. And that's the number one thing. That's the number one thing I would say about Leadership Pipeline. And honestly, the number one mind shift that we have to make as pastors. We need to be able to say, I can tell you how I came to know Christ. I can tell you my testimony, yes. Then I can tell you the day I figured out that I was God's workmanship and how it was made. But then I need to be able to move on to Ephesians 4 and say, this is the day that I got it. This is the day that I realized that my legacy is not what I do. Mm-hmm. It's who I develop. Yeah. And that is my job, not Ephesians 2:10. I've moved on to Ephesians 4. But most pastors, we've done Pipeline with over 4,000 pastors. Last couple of months, I've been in India and Indiana. Both have the same, every church has the same problem. Mm. The same struggles, the same challenges, no matter where it is, no matter what size. Same struggles, and it's this one right here.
It's good.
That is good.
Sounds like a great place to end it.
All right.
Todd, thanks for being here, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be here. I'll come back anytime and tell stories on myself about how horrible I was as a student pastor. There's a reason why I transitioned, guys. I didn't stay there forever.
Well, this has been another episode of the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. Thank you for joining us. If you haven't taken the minute to go by iTunes and leave a rating and review, we sure would love your words and your stars, as many of them that it will fit. We want those stars. It helps other people find the podcast. While you're there, hit that subscribe button.
Hit it.
We really do want to know exactly what you think of the podcast, how it can be better, what you like. We do this thing for you. We will see you next time.